phones there, but across the wall, facing him, there was a shadow. The shadow did not have the shape of man or beast. It was shapeless, scarcely to be seen, but it whispered at him, though there were no words in its whispering, and it reached out towards him, and it stood on the side of the living, and he on the side of the dead. Either he must go down the hill into the desert lands and lightless cities of the dead, or he must step across the wall back into life, where the formless evil thing waited for him. His spirit staff was in his hand, and he raised it high, and with that motion strength came into him as he made to leap the low wall of stone straight at the shadow. The staff burned suddenly white, a blinding light in that dim place. He leaped, felt himself fall, and saw no more. Now, what Petcher and his wife and the witch saw was this. The young wizard had stopped midway in his spell and held the child a while motionless. Then he had laid little Eowyth gently down on the pallet and had risen and stood silent, staff in hand. And all at once he raised the staff high, and it blazed with white fire as if he held the lightning bolt in his grip, and all the household things in the hut leaped out strange and vivid in that momentary fire, and when their eyes were clear from the dazzlement, they saw the young man lying huddled forward on the earthen floor beside the pallet where the child lay dead. To Petcheri it seemed that the wizard also was dead. His wife wept, but he was utterly bewildered. But the witch had some hearsay knowledge concerning magery and the ways a true wizard may go, and she saw to it that Ged, cold and lifeless as he lay, was not treated as a dead man, but as one sick or tranced. He was carried home, and an old woman was left to watch and see whether he slept to wake or slept forever. The little Otak was hiding in the rafters of the house, as it did when strangers entered. And there it stayed while the rain beat on the walls, and the fire sank down in the night, wearing slowly along, left the old woman nodding beside the hearth pit. Then the Otak crept down and came to Ged where he lay stretched stiff and still upon the bed, and began to lick his hands and wrists long and patiently with its dry leaf-brown tongue. Crouching beside his head, it licked his temple, his scarred cheek, and softly his closed eyes, and very slowly, under that soft touch, Ged roused. He woke, not knowing where he had been, or where he was, or what was the faint gray light in the air about him, which was the light of dawn coming to the world. And then the Otak curled up near his shoulder as usual, and went to sleep. Later, when Ged thought back upon that night, he knew that had none touched him when he lay thus, spirit lost, had none called him back in some way, he might have been lost for good. It was only the dumb, instinctive wisdom of the beast who licks his hurt companion to comfort him, and yet in that wisdom Ged saw something akin to his own power, something that went as deep as wizardry. From that time forth he believed that the wise man is one who never sets himself apart from other living things, whether they have speech or not, and in later years he strove long to learn what can be learned in silence from the eyes of animals, the flight of birds, the great slow gestures of trees. He had now made unscathed for the first time that crossing over and return which only a wizard can make with open eyes, and which not the greatest mage can make without risk. But he had returned to a grief and a fear. The grief was for his friend Petcheri, the fear was for himself. He knew now why the archmage had feared to send him forth, and what had darkened and clouded even the mage's foreseeing of his future. For it was darkness itself that had awaited him. The unnamed thing, the being that did not belong in the world, the shadow he had loosed or made. In spirit, at the boundary wall between death and life, it had waited for him these long years. It had found him there, at last, and it would be on his track now, seeking to draw near to him, to take his strength into itself and suck up his life and clothe itself in his flesh. Soon after, he dreamed of the thing like a bear with no head or face. He thought it went fumbling about the walls of the house, searching for the door. Such a dream he had not dreamed since the healing of the wounds the thing had given him. And when he woke, he was weak and cold, and the scars on his face and shoulder drew and ached. And now began a bad time. When he dreamed of the shadow, or so much as thought of it, he felt always that same cold dread. Sense and power drained out of him, leaving him stupid and astray. He raged at his cowardice, but that did no good. He sought for some protection, but there was none. The thing was not flesh, not alive, not spirit, unnamed, having no being, but what he himself had given it, a terrible power outside the laws of the sunlit world. And all he knew of it was that it was drawn to him and would try to work its will through him, being his creature. But in what form it could come, having no real form of its own as yet, and how it would come, and when it would come, this he did not know. He set up what barriers of sorcery he could about his house and about the isle where he lived. Such spell walls must be ever renewed, and soon he saw that if he spent all his strength on these defenses, he would be of no use to the islanders. What could he do between two enemies if a dragon came from Pendor? And again he dreamed. But this time in the dream, the shadow was inside his house, beside the door, reaching out to him through the darkness and whispering words he did not understand. And he woke in terror and sent the werelight flaming through the air, lighting every corner of the little house till he saw no shadow anywhere. And then he put wood on the coals of his fire pit and sat in the firelight, hearing the autumn wind fingering at the thatch roof and whining in the great bare trees above. And he pondered long. An old anger had awakened in his heart. He would not suffer this helpless waiting, this sitting trapped on a little island, muttering useless spells of lock and ward. Yet he could not simply flee the trap. To do so,